I want to start the sermon today with the theme. The theme for the sermon is this: we must live enthusiastically towards others. I mean, there is the Bible is very clear about that, and I hope throughout this sermon to really for you to come out of here thinking, man, I have to live enthusiastically towards others. Reality is that God has lives enthusiastically towards us, and we ought to do the same. Everyone is an asset to God and His kingdom. Everyone. We need to live enthusiastically toward other people. We must be fervently and joyfully intentional in building our relationship with those who are different than us, which means everybody. There's no one person who is the same. We ought to live a life where we are open to new relationships, for God to use us in ways that we thought unthinkable. Just this week, I was just reading different statistics, and I come up with some, I read some surveys that I was, and statistics that was like a little bit, it touched me. And I said, like, man, I got to use this in my sermon this week. See, a few years ago, there was a national survey among people who never attended church before. They were asked different questions, including this one: what type of churches would be most appealing to you if you decide to visit a church? So this is a survey that went to people who does not go to church, and they were asked, listen, if you're going to go to church, what kind of church would you go to? The common response was this. They would seek a church that was committed to helping people outside of the church who needed care and consideration. I want to go to a church, people said, this is unchurched people. They said, I want to go to church where people care for people who are like in need or need some kind of consideration. In an article that I read, talked about how in the last few years the U.S. government has applied budgetary cuts on services, and how this debate has raised the importance of the church and the opportunity that is given to us, the church, to pick up on this lack in addressing the needs of people who will no longer be assisted by the government and their agencies. The government has increasingly relied on the church to support those who fall through the cracks of our society. I mean, the article goes on and on and on of the importance of the church and coming alongside organizations and government assistance in order to supply that which is still missing. And I know sometimes we have a love and hate relationship with the government because they seem to persecute us with some like policies and procedures into regards of spreading the gospel. But it's undeniably evident how many legislators or government officials relies on the church and believes that the church are an indispensable part of our social support system in America. It's just overwhelming how they relied on us, the church. In another survey that I read this week, random people were asked what they felt was the most important reason for the church to exist. Why does the church exist? This is non-Christian people. And most of the responses was this: to demonstrate the love of God by helping the needy. To demonstrate the love of God by helping the needy. So people outside of the church from all demographics expect the church to serve the needy, the hurting, and the broken in our community. It is overwhelming. If you ask anyone who does not go to church and ask, why is the church there? And they will say, to help the needy, to help the broken, and to come alongside those who are hurting in our community. So let me ask you a question. Is it biblical to say that the church is supposed to be the place where people are known, cared, and loved? Are we supposed to be that place where people are known for who they are, cared for who they are, and loved? I think so. I think helping the hurting, the broken, the poor, the needy, and the depraved folks, that's what the church is supposed to be. We're supposed to be that safe place for people to come and to be loved and cared and known. Until now, it is just a statement. So let's see what the Bible has to say about that. So Isaiah Isaiah chapter 1, verse 17 is right in the beginning of the book. God is talking to his nation through the prophet Isaiah, and this is what God tells the nation of Israel, which is, in a sense is talking to the church, you and I today. This is what it says: learn to do good. Commit yourself to seeking justice. Make right for the world's most vulnerable, the oppressed, the orphan, the widow. This is one of the most powerful verses in the entire Bible about loving those who are oppressed in our community. Here in Isaiah, the prophet reminds Israel of what it is that God seeks for their nation, for God's people, of God's people, you and I. We ought to do good. Learn to do good. I know sometimes the word good is like it is like not an objective, and you know. So, but God is like, no, there is a way of doing things that is good. So be committed to seeking justice. God was reminding them that they needed to correct the oppression in their culture that was causing harm and neglect to the fatherless, to the widow, and those who did not have the ability to seek justice on their own. That's what God is trying to do through Isaiah 1:17. But it's not only Isaiah. Zechariah chapter 7, verse 9 and 10. I love these verses here. This is what it says. Here is what the Eternal, the commander of the heavenly armies, has to say. Dispense through justice. I love that word dispense, like let it flow through you, give it freely, give justice freely, dispense. Have mercy on others. The word mercy means to intervene. If someone is hungry, intervene in their hunger. Go there and make a difference, make an impact. Have mercy on others and show all people compassion. Man, it is so easy to have compassion on people that you know, that you already care for. But this is not what we're reading here. He's saying, have compassion on all people. Do not take advantage of those who have lost a spouse or a parent, or those who are outsiders or poor. Don't purpose do evil toward your fellow Israelites. I think the message is clear that there's a whole group of people being neglected. And God said, don't neglect anyone. Care for everybody. Don't take people for granted. God is trying to cover it all and say, listen, there's a group of people being neglected. Please, don't neglect them. Live a life that they benefit. Listen to them. Live enthusiastically towards them. Listen, we have no excuse in the church to neglect those among us. We have no excuse in the church to neglect those who are not part of us. That's not a word that is in God's vocabulary. Every people needs to be accounted for, loved, cared, and known. My last ministry, the town that I was before, Delaware, I took on the responsibility that once a month I would go to nursing homes. I would go to a nursing home, and to a specific nursing home, and I would spend a morning with people. I would pray with them. I would sing. You know, I can't sing. There was a other lady, she would play the piano, and we would sing together. So it was a great duet. We put an album together. One of these days I'll sell it out. You know, I just don't want to be rich yet. But we would go there and she would play, I would sing, and then we would sing together, and then I would share the gospel. And one of those days I was talking to the administrator of the place, and she's like, Sam, if you talk to 10 people here, 9 out of the 10 would say that they're neglected by their families. It's like, if you talk to 10 people here and ask them about, does your family love you? Do you feel loved by your family? 9 out of 10 would tell you they feel like they're neglected. And she said, and most of those people haven't seen their family for 6 months to a year. Listen, we live, you know, in a society that neglected people. Listen, if somebody don't benefit you, you take them for granted and you neglected them. What a castaway society we live into. And God, through His Word, saying, stop neglecting people. Stop taking people for granted. Look what He says on Proverbs chapter 31, verse 8 and 9. Proverbs 31, chapter verses 8 and 9 says this. Speak out on behalf of those who have no voice, and defend all those who have been passed over. Open your mouth, judge fairly, and stand up for the rights of the afflicted and the poor. I love the words here. He says, speak out for those who have no voice. Defend all those who have been taken, who have been passed over, neglected, and not cared for. Defend them. Open your mouth and judge fairly. Stand up for the rights of the afflicted and the poor. I think it is clear. What is our duty here? See, here's the thing, and I said this in the first service. It is not in my notes, and so forgive me if it is out of line here. I'm a foreigner, and there's parts of American culture that I'm still trying to be acquainted to and understand, and I've been here for 20 years. I understand that, but there are some things that I still don't ingrain in my mind. We read verses like these about speaking up for those who have no voice, like the unborn child, or we say defend those who have been passed over, people in nursing home, the poor, the neglected. And people read these and they automatically tie those things to a political party or a political view, and it's all about politics. And let me tell you this, I'm not a political guy, and things like this is not a political thing. It is a biblical thing. It is a Christian thing. It is not a politics thing. Do you got that? I am tired of, blame this, blame that. And God is like, no, it is your responsibility to speak up, to defend, to open your mouth, and to stand. And He's talking to you and I, the church. He's not talking to our government. I get pretty passionate about that. As the church, we neglect people. We don't do what God has called us to do, because sometimes it is easier to blame other people for it than to leave it. When Solomon was writing these verses here, he was writing, he says, open your mouth. He's saying, you can't be silent when you see social injustice. You can't do that. As God's people, we must be, the church should be at the forefront of the fight for those in our community who can't fight for themselves. I believe that the church should be at the forefront of the fight for those in our community who can't fight for themselves. I'm sure, I'm not sure about you, but I have discovered in my Christian journey that the church talks better game than they live when it comes to loving the broken, the needy, the unborn, the immigrant, the disabled, the hurting in our communities. I really think we talk too much and do too little. I really believe that. I really believe that we pay like lip service to the needy in our community. We have tons of church that give little more than lip service to their community needs. They are self-centered church that can care less about what is going on around them. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to be that kind of church. Do you want to be that kind of church? Do you want to be that kind of church who can care less for the needy in our community? We want to be a healthy church, right? And a church and a healthy church got a balance, caring for itself and caring for those in our community. We have to be able to balance that. And when we cannot be a healthy church who will impact the world until we get our eyes off of ourselves into other people. It's just not possible. If the church eye is focused on itself, It becomes self-absorbed church, an unhealthy church. And we want to be healthy and impactful church, right? Isn't that what we want to be? But here's the thing. So if we want to serve those in our community, if you want to be a healthy and impactful church, you cannot do that. Here's the thing. Ministering among the poor, the abused, the broken, the hurt, the destitute, the immigrant, the forgotten, cannot be done without enthusiasm. If you're going to serve, we must live enthusiastically towards others. We must live enthusiastically towards them. You know, they are not a project, you know, that you go out there and trying to fix people. No. They are the purpose by which we live. You know, I love words and definition of words. So the definition of the word enthusiasm is up there for you. And this is what it is out of the dictionary. Intense and eager enjoyment, interest, or approval. As in the statement, like her energy and enthusiasm for life. She's like intense about life and enjoy life and is interested in approval of the life that she lives. So it's like, you know, is this eager to live in a way that other people benefits from you? Is eager to live in a way that people feels that they are worth something, that they are known, that they are cared and loved. It reminds me of 1 John chapter 3, verse 1. 1 John chapter 3, verse 1, it reminds of this. Here's what it says. Consider the kind of extravagant love the Father has lavished on us. Can you hear how God is living enthusiastically towards you? He spares nothing for you. His love for you is extravagant, and he lavished on you. Consider the kind of extravagant love the Father has lavished on us. That he calls us children of God. It is true. We are his beloved children. God is enthusiastically living towards you. He's passionate and zealous about you. He's intense. He's eagerly enjoying your presence. He's interested in your life and approving of you. You are his children. We are his children. You are his child. He cares for the most intimate part of you. God has spared nothing for you. That's why we can read today John 3:16, because God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son so that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. He's so enthusiastic towards you that you can read and have John 3:16 being a reality in your life. He's so enthusiastically that living towards you. God is so enthusiastically living towards you that Jesus died on the cross so that you would live enthusiastic lives towards God and other people. Enthusiasm is a crucial character that we don't hear about it very often. Enthusiasm will enable us to overcome disappointment and setbacks so that we can be positive, optimistic, and keep up our interest, attitude, and zeal, even when things are harsh and not going well. See, I love this statement here. I don't know where I read it before, but it's very important. Enthusiasm is the pipe through which flows the serious effort of our work and service to others. I love that. It is the avenue by which our idea of serving other people comes from. Enthusiasm is the fuel that empowers the Christian testimony and gives us the love for the call that God has given us, the call to serve. See, the opposite of enthusiasm is apathy, right? It's apathy, indifference, and laziness. That's the difference. That's the opposite side of that. And let me tell you this, apathy thinks greatness is in the past. Apathy destroys passion and devotion. In the individual or in the church, apathy is a dangerous thing. When there's no effort to impact others, the church will become stagnant and eventually will die. So will the individual. Romans 12:11 tells us this. Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. I mean, the Bible speaks loudly against apathy, indifference, and laziness. The word fervent there combats all those three words. apathy, indifference, and laziness. You know why? Because to live for God, it requires this energy and this disposition. You have, and this disposition and energy comes from God. The root meaning of the word enthusiasm is en and in and does. The Greek for the spirit, for the word spirit. More simply stated, enthusiasm root meaning is inspired by God. To be enthusiastic means that you are inspired by God, that God is inspiring you. To be enthusiastic, one must be channel of God's inspiration that will flow through you, through me. God is inspiring us. Therefore, our hands act as the inspiration that comes from God. That kind of inspiration gives potentially limitless energy to accomplish things. If we simply tune in to what God is trying to do through you and through us. Love for helping and inspiring others flows from an enthusiastic, passionate, fervent, zealous life. So someone who lives enthusiastically towards others will spare nothing in the effort to help them in their distress. Isn't that the kind of people and the kind of church we want to be? The kind of people in church who spares nothing in order to see the needs of other people met? A church who spares nothing in order to help those in our community that are hurting, that are broken, and without a voice. If you ask me, Pastor Sam, what is the one verse? Give me one verse that I should focus on in order to, one passage that I should focus on and learn to be more enthusiastically towards others. What would it be? And I'll say there's one passage, Romans chapter 12, verse 9 to 21. We're going to read it together. That really just speaks out about this need for the Christian to live enthusiastic life toward other people. Romans chapter 12, verse 9 to 21. By now, if you're visiting us for the first time, you know that my English is horrible. If I can't speak, reading is pretty bad too, right? So you gotta follow along with me, all right? Follow with me. And this is Paul writing to the Roman church, to the church in Rome. And he's writing for you and I today, God's people in the 21st century. And he starts that passage by telling us this, love others well. He doesn't say, do a mediocre job in loving other people. He said, there's a way of loving people that is called well. So love people well. And don't hide behind a mask. Love authentically. Listen, we read passages like this, and there's something, a dichotomy in our minds and our hearts, because one of the biggest criticism that comes in the church, and we ourselves make that criticism, is that Christian people are fake. They're fake. They wear masks. They're fake. Right? It is true. It is true in so many ways. And aren't you tired of fake Christians? I am tired of fake Christians, so that's why every time we talk about this, right? Listen, we are all in need of God's mercy, of forgiveness, and grace. There's no difference between you and I here. But we can't fake it either. We gotta live authentic life. So if it is bad, call it bad. If it is good, call it good. Paul is saying, love others well. Don't go on faking and loving people. You will be found out. Love authentically. Listen, if you don't want to love people, that's fine. Don't love on people. But if you're going to love on people, as the Bible tells you to, do it out of the heart because you want to, not because you feel like it's an obligation. He says, despise evil, pursue what is good, as if your life depends on it. Live in true devotion to one another, loving each other as sisters and brothers. Be first to honor others by putting them first. I love that. He says, do not lack in your faithfulness and hard work. Sometimes as Christians, we feel like we can live mediocre life, do mediocre job, serve people mediocrely. And Paul is like, don't lack in your faithfulness. Don't lack on hard work. If there's people that must work for it, it's you and I. We are example to the world and we ought to work hard. He says, let your spirit be on fire, bubbling and boiling over as you serve the Lord. Do not forget to rejoice, for hope is always just around the corner. Hold up through the hard times that are coming and devote yourselves to prayer. Share what you have with the saints. Share what you have. I mean, let me talk about this. Don't you like reading the Bible? There's some passage you don't like reading, amen? Right? Because it's like, really? Do I have to share? Here's one of the biggest hypocrisy about being an adult. You have kids, and then your kids are, you know, playing with their friends, and what do you tell their friends? What do you tell your kids? Share. Share. Share your food. Share your toy. Share, share, share. And then we grow up, and you're like, I'm not sharing anything. That's their problem. I'm not going to help anybody. I'm not going to share my car. I'm not going to share of my food. I'm not going to share my house. I'm not going to share anything. Share what you have with the saints so they lack nothing. Take every opportunity to open your life and your homes. Stop it. I'm not doing that, Pastor Sam. I got to open my house and my life to people that I don't know. I mean, Paul is clear. We got to have this hospitality within us. We need to accept people for who they are and open up of ourselves, of our homes, to receive those that you would otherwise. That's what Christianity is all about. You want to live a life that impacts over others? Receive them. Be hospitable towards them. Share with them. If people mistreat, or I can't pronounce that word, malign, that is not malign. How in the world is that malign? You guys are crazy. If people mistreat you or malign you, bless them. Bless them. I always speak blessing, not curses. If someone have cause to celebrate, join them in the celebration. Sometimes I feel like if someone is, have cause to celebrate, be jealous of them. Right? I should say that, shouldn't it? Because sometimes that's how we act. Somebody just got a raise and you're like, I didn't get a raise. And you can keep on going with the illustration on that. But the Bible actually says if people are rejoicing, celebrating, guess what? Celebrate with them. If others are weeping, join that as well. Work toward unity and live in harmony with one another. Avoid thinking you're better than others unless you're married. And then you have the husband, you can be better than the wife. Isn't that how it works? No? Sometimes we have a love and hate relationship with the Word of God, don't we? Because Paul tells us, work toward unity and live in harmony with one another. It doesn't matter who it is. Avoid thinking you're better than others. And man, let me tell you, so many times in relationships we think we're better than other people. In the church, we think you're better than other people, and the pastor is better than everybody else because, you know, I got a platform to speak of. And you know, like, what? Where we come up with that? Do you know that I'm just like you? Right? You have heard me say this many times. There's no difference between you and I. We are sinners in need of mercy, in need of God, and God in our lives is not different from you and me. And there's no superiority here. We are all the same in God's eyes, and we have different callings. I understand that, but we are not to think of ourselves better than other people or wiser than other people. Instead, embrace common people and ordinary tasks. Do not retaliate evil. Do not retaliate with evil, regardless of the evil brought against you. Try to do what is good and right and honorable as agreed upon by all people. If it is within your power, which is always is, make peace with all people. Again, my loved ones, do not seek revenge. Instead, allow God's wrath to make sure justice is served. So many times people do wrong against us and we want to take justice in our own hands and do whatever we think we should do against them. Don't we feel like that all the time? And Paul's like, no. God is watching over your life. He cares for you. He's enthusiastically living towards you. He's interested. So don't go on sinning to justify things. No. Let God do what God does. Be avenue of justice, not injustice. Turn it over to him. For the scripture says, revenge is mine. I'll settle all the scores, but consider this bit of wisdom. If your enemy is hungry, give him something to eat. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. Because if you treat him kindly, it will be like heaping hot coals on top of his head. Never let evil win. Christians don't allow evil to win. Never let evil get the best out of you. Instead, overpower evil with good. That's what we are called to. We, as Christians, we are called to live out these enthusiastic lives towards other, because that's how good wins all the time. Let me conclude with one last thought here. For many Christians in the 21st century, the primary way of being a church that impacts the world is to influence politics in order to make America more Christian. Now, there are others who take the opposite attitude. They conclude that Jesus didn't try to overhaul the politics system of his day through political means, so Christian faith is only a private matter that has no social relevance whatsoever. Can I politely, respectfully say that both approaches, that there's a different approach to it? They are both not maybe correct. That there is a Jesus approach to it. Jesus didn't allow the society or the politics of his day to define his ministry. Can I say that again? He didn't allow nothing to define his ministry. I believe he offered a radical, distinct alternative for you and I. Let me give you an example, okay? Let me give you examples. I have three examples here, okay? Jesus never entered into a fight or a debate about the status of a woman in society of his days. You won't read it. Rather, he exposed the ugliness of how women were treated by counterculturally treating them better. He elevated them. That's what Jesus did. He acted like that way. He went countercultural way and treated them differently. Jesus ignored the negative consequences of his own reputation and befriended women and gave them a culturally unprecedented dignity of the time. Another example, Jesus did the same for social outcasts. They were neglected and not cared for. So Jesus comes along, and instead of going out there and debating people, no, he served them. He served the leper, the blind, the demonized, the poor, the prostitute, the tax collectors, the sinners, and those who had no voice to fend for themselves in the first century. Jesus exposed the evil of racial bigotry by fellowshipping with Samaritans and Gentiles. He even praised them in his teachings. Let me give you one last one. Jesus exposed the cruelty of the Roman government by allowing himself to be crucified by them. Instead of using his power to preserve his life, he exercised the power of love by giving of his life away. Jesus lived enthusiastically by sparing nothing in order to see humanity being restored to its original state. And we are called to live in the same way. The power of the church is not one where Christian aims to attain power over something. No, instead we exercise the power of service, which is beautiful and speak loudly, and it is displayed through love that is seen by our actions. Jesus called the church to be a community characterized by radical, revolutionary, Calvary quality, and enthusiastic love. Can I say that again? Jesus has called you and I, the church, to be a community characterized by radical, revolutionary, Calvary quality and enthusiastic love. A community that manifests the love of the triune God. A community that strives for justice, not by conquering, but by being willing to serve and to suffer for others, with others. A community that God uses to transform the world by providing it with an alternative to the world's own self-centered, violent way of existing. We can't accomplish that if we don't live enthusiastic lives towards others, as Jesus did, as he demonstrated to us in the gospel. So this week, I would love to give you an opportunity to live enthusiastically towards people that you will not know, the people you don't know. I want to give you the opportunity to serve and to willingly give in of yourself enthusiastically, fervently, joyfully towards people you don't know. So watch this video.
The Free Store is a